This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
There are choices that we make every day in our lives that are massively beneficial for our individual health, and it turns out as a beneficial side effect, also have these great impacts on the environment around us and essentially on the climate.
Nowadays, human health is affected by a whole new array of variables, from the impacts of climate change to the vast amount of both accurate and inaccurate health information propagated by the internet and public officials. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak with Dr. Neha Pathak, a practicing medical doctor and medical journalist who serves as WebMD's chief physician editor. We look at some of the health impacts of a warming planet, discuss the ever-expanding role that the internet plays in modern medicine, and talk about WebMD's new Embody platform. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Dr. Neha Pathak. She's WebMD's chief physician editor for health and lifestyle medicine and the host of the WebMD Health Discovered podcast. Neha, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you have a new platform called Embody at WebMD. Why don't you first explain what the idea behind this is, and then we'll dive into some of the intersections of climate change and health that you specialize in.
Absolutely. So I think, number one, what is so important to us at WebMD, and particularly for me as a primary care doctor, is to help people not only understand the health conditions that they may already have, but to understand ways that they can address their health conditions, prevent health conditions in the future with just small, sustainable changes in their lifestyle that can support their heart health, their weight management, whatever their health goals are now and well into the future. So I really think the Embody platform is meant to help people do a couple of things. One is to understand what is the science behind some of these small lifestyle changes to improve their health. And then the second piece is, how do they incorporate these changes into their lives? What can they do? Because it's so hard to do some of these things, even though they're very simple, like changing what we put on our plate or how active we are or how much we sleep. We still need a lot of guidance around how to do it in our lives.
And let's take a step back and explain your connection to WebMD. That's always something that I find interesting, is that this is a web platform with lots of physicians involved, but the basic idea is there's a lot of self-research and self-help involved in it. So it's in some ways, it's a doctor's worst nightmare, but also it's very helpful. You know, we're educating people, but that can be a slippery slope when you don't have a medical degree. Why don't you talk about that challenge that you face every day and how WebMD is trying to meet that challenge?
I love that question. So I'll answer it from two points of view. One, as the primary care provider out in the real world seeing patients, and the other, who's really able to kind of see behind the curtain of what WebMD is trying to do and the role it's trying to fill. So, number one, WebMD, the main goal that we have as doctors and other health professionals that work on the WebMD platform is essentially to say, look, people need health information, and we want to make sure that that health information that they're finding on the internet is as accurate as possible, that it has been reviewed by medical professionals in that specialty field, and that it's up to date and giving you the most actionable information to protect your health and to manage your health. Now, what often happens, and I think this is where a lot of folks get a little nervous, and as a primary care doctor, before I knew, you know, what we're trying to do here and what we do here at WebMD, is that people are looking for health information and they're concerned about something. So, and this is, I don't know if you've ever sort of had this experience. I know I have. When you feel like something is going wrong in your body, you may kind of come up with the worst case scenario. And then you're going to go on the internet and you're going to try to sort of figure out, is this what I have? Is this what's going on? And I think that really is important information for a primary care doctor to recognize, look, this content is going to give you all of the possible scenarios that may be going on. And now you need to take this information to your doctor and say, look, this is what I'm most worried about. And the content is suggesting that this is really not very likely for me, but I need you to talk me through it. I need you to help me understand why, what I should be concerned about and why, you know, my worst case scenario, the thing that I'm thinking about, is doesn't even align with the symptoms I'm having. Does that help? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I think it, what you're describing is a fascinating insight into how the field of medicine has evolved. I grew up the son of a physician who I think was not being questioned in the 70s and 80s by his patients at all. But now it's not just the internet and the information that a patient is receiving, but it's also the barrage of advertisements they see by big pharma and all these drugs, you know, ask your doctor about this. And so I imagine that a lot of your work is parrying those questions, assuaging some of your patients' fears, because you put in a few symptoms and you're like, oh, I have leukemia or whatever. People tend to focus on the worst possible diagnose, and they may see in WebMD that this could be four or five different things, and they see the worst one, and that freaks them out sometimes. So obviously you get a lot of people who are concerned, but they're also advocating for themselves in a way that we haven't seen before. So that's a good thing to some degree, but it must be difficult and a very different part of your workflow than it was for my dad's, let's say.
Yeah. And I think one of the key things that is so important to me as a health professional that works with WebMD is that we have a very strict separation of what we'll call it church and state. That means as a doctor, all the health professionals, all I'm looking to ensure is that this is the best possible health information. It's the most accurate and it's the most actionable. And what actions do I want you to take? One, I want, wherever it's possible, to potentially try some things at home to see, you know, is it possible? Are my symptoms getting better with this treatment? Do I need to ice a certain area? Should I heat it? You know, we want to provide that kind of actionable evidence for sort of what you can do on your own. But we also want to be actionable in terms of, these are really great questions that you should ask your healthcare team. And here they are. And here's why you're asking them. Here's the information that you need so that you can ensure that you're advocating for yourself the best that you can with that team of health professionals that, unfortunately, the reality is we just have less access to. And when we do have access to them, we just have less time with them. And that really kind of speaks again to why Embody is in the same way. You know, when you go to your health professional, often what you might get is you'll leave with a prescription for something. And you'll be very clear on, this is the name of the prescription, this is the dose, and this is the time that I have to take it. So you may still have some questions, but doctors and health professionals are very clear on that. But when it comes to making healthy lifestyle changes, we are very fuzzy. We might say, oh, you know, just eat better, or just get more physical activity, just try to sleep more. That's really not actionable. That's really hard to figure out, what exactly do I need to do? And so that's another gap that we're trying to fill with the Embody platform. We want to make these prescriptions really concrete for people.
There was a woman in Georgia, didn't feel just right. She had fever all day and chills at night. Now things got worse, yes, a serious bind. In times like this, it takes a man to style like getting out of a vine. A doctor of the heart and a doctor of the mind.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Dr. Neha Pathak from WebMD. So Neha, we're talking about these short-term versus long-term outcomes for patients and how they can take advice from a WebMD or a physician in person and turn those into actionable activities to make themselves healthier. Similarly, climate change is one of these policy issues which is short-term versus long-term, and it's a very difficult one for a policymaker and a politician to wade through because on one hand, people want cheap energy. On the other hand, they want clean air, and those things don't necessarily always intersect correctly. You've studied climate change's effects on health. What drew you to studying this thing, which does not necessarily have any easy short-term fixes?
Yeah, so I think what really drew me to this field of climate and environmental impacts on health is the same thing that drew me to lifestyle and its impacts on health. And the reason is because when I see patients in the clinic, I can sort of think about this patient just in the very short term. So they're having an asthma flare or their COPD is acting up. This is a patient who I wouldn't necessarily think of should have high blood pressure, but has really, really high blood pressure. This is somebody that has experienced wildfire smoke and now is coming in with preterm labor, let's say. So what I realized is that I could be in the clinic and just focus on sort of this acute right at this current moment issue. And I also want to understand the root causes of some of these health issues. And I want to tackle both as a primary care provider. I want to tackle the reason you're here today, but I want to also help you prevent health problems from happening. So when we think about climate and we think about the health impacts of climate change, we think about a couple of drivers. So we're seeing a lot of people experiencing more heat for longer periods. And so what that comes along with is not necessarily just what we think of as heat-related illnesses, so dehydration or heat stress, but what we also see is if you're somebody that has a chronic condition like heart disease or lung disease, during those periods of higher temperature, you're more likely to experience exacerbations or symptoms of a heart attack or stroke potentially, or worsening of your asthma because pollen season is just happening earlier and for longer periods. Then if we think about, aside from heat, and we talked a little bit about air, changes in air from pollen to worsening air pollution. So we know that when heat combines with the pollutants that are already in our air, it can worsen. It can have this chemical reaction that makes something called ozone, which can also worsen our lung health. So it's really important for us to recognize that a lot of things that are happening to us have a longer term, they're happening to us because of some of these exposures that we weren't necessarily exposed to 20, 30, 40 years ago, in terms of the frequency and the intensity that we're experiencing them today.
And when you look at some of the more progressive nations, not thinking of the US, but countries where there's no debate about the reality of climate change, where are some of the most effective policies being targeted in populations to try to mitigate the health effects of climate change?
So I think as a doctor, if you think of what your doctor is generally going to ask you to avoid in terms of your lifestyle, they're going to say you should avoid smoking. Well, in the same way, we now have a lot of evidence that we should be thinking about air pollution in those same terms. We're seeing that just like smoking cigarettes has an impact on our heart health, our brain health, our lung health, breathing in a lot of air pollution, and there's no safe amount of air pollution, is also at an individual and a population level going to impact people's heart health, lung health, brain health. And we have a lot of evidence for that. So I think where we do see areas and regions where health professionals recognize that link and that communities and community leaders are taking action to try to limit the amount of air pollution exposure, that is going to be a benefit not only for your current health, but your long-term health. And we also know, so I think it's really hard for an individual person listening to think about how am I going to impact the climate to protect my health? This is also why I love lifestyle interventions and behavior changes when it comes to this really large problem, this complex problem that individuals can feel like I have no control over. But there are choices that we make every day in our lives that are massively beneficial for our individual health. And it turns out, as a beneficial side effect, also have these great impacts on the environment around us and essentially on the climate. And I can list a few if you'd like me to talk about that in a little bit more detail.
Well, first I wanted you to maybe focus on a more holistic approach instead of just the individual approach to mitigating the problems with climate change. Obviously, having universal health care is a nice floor to start with in terms of let's just assume everybody has health care. So let's look at a country that has universal health care. And then what countries stand out to you as being on the forefront and taking important steps that can not only inform the population, but can maybe help individuals in terms of both short and long-term effects of climate change, similar to a population being made aware of the effects of smoking?
Yeah, I think that there's amazing work being done in the United Kingdom with the National Health Service, where they're really looking at the health sector itself as a driver of climate change. So how much climate pollution is coming out of the health sector itself, and then also what are health professionals doing in terms of limiting the greenhouse gas emissions from the health sector, but then also how are we making patients healthier so that the exposure that they do have, they can sort of experience a safer environment, so potentially have less longer term risks. But I think in the US, we also have a lot of pockets and a lot of places where we're seeing some of the same things. In California, in New York City, we're seeing large shifts of public hospitals. They're really looking at their own climate footprints. And they're also thinking about shifts and changes that they can make within the health system so that the patients will be healthier and they have lower greenhouse gas emissions. So one of the biggest changes is shifting towards plant forward diet by default. So you'll have a plant-rich meal in the hospital, which we know is going to be better for your health and has lower greenhouse gas emissions.
And what about in developing countries where the interaction of healthcare professionals and populations is just unfortunately not at where it should be? How does a healthcare professional or a government try to help its population without having the coffers or the infrastructure in place to help individuals on a case-by-case basis?
So I think that globally, one, we have to recognize that most developing nations play a much smaller role in creating the greenhouse gases that are big drivers for climate change. So essentially, they have a lower greenhouse gas footprint to begin with. But they do unfortunately suffer from more of the harms of climate change. So we see a lot more flooding-related health impacts, heat-related health impacts, air pollution-related health impacts in a lot of developing nations. One of my other hats is I am a lecturer in the Yale School of Public Health for their Climate Change and Health Certificate Program, and we have learners from across the globe. And this is a piece that makes me very optimistic. So learners that I work with from different countries in Africa, from different countries in South Asia, where they have health ministers that are looking at climate and health as a unified problem, and they're looking at it together, and they're looking at community health workers and other types of workers that can really go out and reach populations in areas even when there's minimal or lower access to healthcare, and help train and help people in these local communities understand some of the risks that they may be facing from things like heat or things like flooding or increases in dengue and malaria because of shifts in where mosquitoes are now carrying some of these vector-borne illnesses. So it is sad to see the burden of disease falling so disproportionately on developing nations, but it is really amazing to see how developing nations are tackling this problem.
Is there anyone home? Come on, come down. I hear you're feeling down. Well, I can ease your pain, get you on your feet again. Relax, relax, relax. I need some information first. Just the basic.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Dr. Neha Pathak from WebMD. She's involved in the new platform Embody. We were talking earlier about how so much of WebMD's work and how much of Big Pharma's advertising is usually under the rubric of ask your doctor for more information. But one of the things that we need to consider is that there's around 28 million uninsured Americans, and by some estimates, as much as 90 million Americans have inadequate health insurance. So a lot of people are not able to necessarily go and ask their doctors. What role can a WebMD help? And on the flip side, where do you think the internet plays a role in maybe making people, giving them a false sense of security or false sense of fear?
So I think that number one, there is so much, to the point you made earlier, there is so much information out on the internet, on social media, in other spaces. So I think number one, the question is, and you combine that with the fact that, to your point, fewer people, or we're seeing, we're in a situation where a lot of people are losing access to healthcare, or they have much more limited access to healthcare. So you have a situation where you have less access to a trusted primary care doctor who has known you for a long period of time, and more access to information that can be confusing or, worst case scenario, lead you down the wrong path. And so I think at WebMD, what we really see our role and responsibility is to try to fill some of this information gap, where we're really saying, hey, based on all of the evidence, these are pieces of information that are going to be most helpful. They are accurate. And if you are able to access care, and unfortunately, I think for a lot of people that means seeking emergency care or urgent care, this is going to be really helpful decision-making advice for you, because potentially we know, the reality is that people do have limits on how frequently they can access their doctor or a doctor or another type of health professional, pharmacist in their community.
So I can't help but think that the anti-vax movement, which is the head of the anti-vax movement in the last 5 years, is now the Secretary of Human Health Services, which is fairly bizarre. But it must be challenging for you and your colleagues at WebMD, where there's this notion that you should be able to advocate for yourself, do your own research. But that term, do your own research, got a pretty bad name from the pandemic, where people were eschewing proven science and not getting vaccinated. And we see that now trickling down from the Trump administration, where we're seeing little pockets of measles outbreaks, et cetera. How do you and your colleagues deal with that messaging in this new reality?
So I think that we are essentially an apolitical organization. That means that we're not necessarily wading into debates. We are following the science, and we are essentially saying this is the, and what is really important is to follow where the science guides us and look at what health professional society. So these are the leading experts in a particular field. This is the guidance that they are helping us to recognize as the most important guidance. So whether that's through the American Academy of Pediatrics, when we're thinking about pediatric vaccine schedules, what do those schedules tell us about how we should be guiding patients, and particularly new parents who might be confused? So we're really, again, always going to focus on the best evidence and the best sources of information, and so that we can share that with our readers.
She is the chief physician, editor, health and lifestyle medicine at WebMD, and the new platform that WebMD has launched is called Embody. Dr. Neha Pathak. Neha, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Freddie Hubbard, Little Feet, and Pink Floyd.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.